Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Chad Lang. He is a director of school improvement and human resources in Glenwood CSD in Glenwood, Iowa. He is a current author and researcher of grading and assessment, extracurricular participation in schools, school leadership, and school improvement. And he's co-authoring a book for 2023 publication called A Parent's Guide to Grading and Reporting, Being Clear About What Matters with Dr. Matt Townsley. He is also the host of the Learning with Interesting People podcast, seasons 1 and 2. He was a State of Missouri AD of the Year in 2018, and he has his EDD from the University of Missouri, which his dissertation research was about the impact of multi-sport participation and academic achievement in rural settings. Welcome to the podcast, Chad.
Thanks, Dana. That's very kind of you. I'm super humbled to be able to join your podcast. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, well, it's great to get you on. We did collaborate at the end of December with Road to Awesome, and we're on a live broadcast then, so I was able to connect with you a little bit then, and excited to have you on today. But I'll start out like I start out with everybody. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, I think my first year as a school administrator, I was in the trenches and had to crawl out. I was very, very fortunate to get my first administrative position as an assistant principal of a middle school, grades 5 through 8. And what came along with that is the district activities director position. So it's quite a hybrid to begin with. And I was filling in for a very well-respected person that did the job before me, who then became the high school principal within that district. And it was my first administrative position. It was like wearing two hats at the same time, very, very different day and night job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they intermixed. And that was in 2013, in the fall of 2013. And just learning, nothing could have prepared me for what that was like. We had great kids, a very, very veteran staff, a principal of the building that I happened to work for of more than 15 years. So in so many different ways, I was blessed. What I wasn't prepared for is the balancing act of wearing more than one hat. And so many administrators or teacher leaders today have to do that. And I think it can't be underscored how much of a challenge that is. You need to be a master at prioritization and making sure that the students are at the forefront of what you do. And so that was a big challenge for me. I had a lot of people supporting me, onboarding me. The person I replaced was literally 500 yards across campus that I could call at any given moment and say, how'd you do this? Yeah. He had done that similar position for 6 or 7 years prior to me. But we're different people. We're very good friends today, still some 10 years later, but learning to navigate that and making it my own position was quite a challenge. Coming into a very veteran staff, mm-hmm. It was a smaller middle school in terms of enrollment of size, but and staff. But what was interesting is when I came on the staff in 2013 in that school administration role, I was the youngest faculty member in the building.
Oh wow!
So I think I felt like I maybe overcompensated for that going in. I might have been a little bit intimidated and might have been a little bit more feeling like I had a need to overcompensate for my lack of experience. And in doing so, maybe was a little too full speed and a little too more formal for so many people that had been there for so long and didn't develop relationships maybe with some of the folks as well as I would have liked to. And so it's not so much how I crawled out of the trenches. It was more about how I like slowly slogged my way out of the trench over time. I realized how to develop relationships so much better. Mm-hmm. And I think I come off as a transactional person, like, let's get this done. I need you to do this X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And speed right by the relationship building and context. Mm-hmm. One of the things I know from like taking the Gallup strengths is that context is really, really low for me. Well, I know that now in 2022, but I didn't know that in 2013.
Yeah.
And, it's just a real deep pull for me out of my strengths to understand and appreciate the context of a school setting. And so in retrospect, man, that would have been great to know to say, hey, taking into consideration the context for how the school organization got to that point, before going into the position or as you're starting a position is so important. And if you realize that that's not a strength for you, how are you going to compensate that to understand the history of that school or the current reality? And so I would have done a lot better. And I think going back to the balancing part, I had to figure out what the job looked like. What happens if, like in my case, I have, you know, two or three student discipline issues come up in the afternoon. I've got the visiting school waiting to find out if our baseball field's going to be dry enough to play a game. Yeah. I need to go out and walk on the field. Like, it was a really unique hybrid, and everything would happen at once. And so to learn how to crawl out of those trenches, I had to have a lot of good conversations with people to say, what do you think I should do when? Yeah. How would you do this? How did you do this? How would you like it when? And I also had to explain to people some of the parameters that come up. For example, I had to have a conversation with our building and grounds about, you know, I don't get to pick when student discipline issues happen. And I know you really need to know whether or not we're playing a baseball game today, but my priorities are going to be our students first. So when this happens, what would you like for me to do? They had never been asked that question before. They had no idea what my day-to-day looked like inside the building. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was just asking more questions to try to meet all the people I interacted with within one day that didn't intersect. I was the only intersection point for them. And so, you know, they're just wearing their colored glasses, so to speak. And so whether that include, and that included a lot of stakeholders in one given day, from parents to students to teachers to coaches to visiting schools, and even sometimes the media as well. And of course, sales reps and the whole nine yards. So, you know, I was able to crawl slowly out of the trenches, A, through experience, B, through building better relationships, and really C, asking some clarifying questions about how people would prefer to interact with me in that position.
Yeah, and I really like how you point out, like, it was that communication piece you had to have. It was learning about building relationships, right? Because when we first start out in leadership positions or in any type of, you know, even new teachers or, you know, any new position, you know, we're not the experts from the get-go, right? So reflecting back and seeing kind of some of the things that you did improve over time and how you were able to learn and grow, I think that's an important piece to bring forward in that trench story. Let's fast forward to your work today. So you're the director of school improvement and HR in your school district. So talk a little bit about how your previous leadership positions have kind of contributed to working in this position and what you're doing exactly as the director of school improvement.
Sure. Well, I have an awesome job. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to work at a school district that has a position called director of school improvement. And what that position really does is allow me to align our teaching and learning principles now also along with our HR philosophy and processing to try to identify how we can lift up our core values in an aligned, coalesced way, I guess you might say, and more than just a mission and vision on a piece of paper, but actually working collectively. What I've learned is that in my position, because I'm not the superintendent of schools and I'm not a principal and or a teacher, I'm kind of somewhere in between, it's navigating a lot of relationships. So that's the same, but really what I've learned is, we all sit at a different ring, on the ladder.
Yeah.
Sometimes I refer to this as sort of like the Ferris wheel effect. You get on a Ferris wheel and unfortunately, what if it breaks down and it freezes? Mm-hmm. And I've never had that happen, but I can always imagine that after a little bit of panic, you start to look out and see the amusement park for what it is.
Yeah.
And I can assure you that probably every seat on that Ferris wheel sees the amusement park differently. Those at the base level are hearing the voices on the ground, maybe concern about what's happening. Those a little bit higher can see that the line that it's causing to back up to the next ride. Those a little bit higher are actually seeing the entire park and maybe where things are popular at what time and where the lines are. And maybe those at the very top are seeing even above and beyond the actual amusement park itself and maybe the traffic flow into the amusement park and so on. And I think school leadership's that way. And so I sort of feel like that I end up having that stalled view almost to the top. And so the question is that when we all get off, we never really debrief about what we saw.
Yeah.
And so what I love about this position is I get to help tie those conversations together from a board of education to a superintendent view, sort of clarifying those goals and visions of short-term and long-term plans for how they'll actually look in actionable sequencing for those that are teachers and administrators that work with me. I help to clarify how that can be lived out today. Mm-hmm. So that's through our curriculum process and our assessment process. Also, any type of programming that we have for our social and emotional well-being of our students, and sort of trying to dovetail those efforts together to A, make it more meaningful for our staff, B, have a more direct impact on our kids on a daily basis, and to try to reduce any sort of initiative fatigue or overlap or overload. Mm-hmm. And this one more thing. And one of the things we know for sure, even prior to the pandemic, teachers didn't need one more thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, and they most certainly don't now. And so just helping to clarify that vision, also to try to, you know, always reduce this us versus them, leadership versus, you know, everybody else type of mentality, that we're actually all in this together. And so thinking about it from just those views, either the rungs on a ladder or that Ferris wheel analogy that I use, is mm-hmm. important to explain what it is that I do. And then most recently in the last 15 months, adding the HR role to my responsibilities allows me to really work with that Jim Collins mentality, or a Todd Whitaker, which is, you know, we've got two really good ways to make schools better, which is help the folks that we have get better at what they do and refine, and also hire great people. And so putting the right people in the right seats on the bus to collaborate, work together, communicate, grow, and learn from each other has been something I've really enjoyed. Fortunately for us, we have just tremendous staff in our school district, and we're very blessed. Some of the very, very best professional development we could do is just in our own hallway, in our own building, in our own town. We'd have the opportunity to go see other people now that, you know, the pandemic has been a little bit of a lightened load for us now that we're actually able to do that. It's just been so rewarding for our staff to have their class covered for 45 minutes and go watch someone maybe in a different building on transitions or classroom management, for example. It's just been a real lift for us this year. So facilitating a lot of those types of things, working with our instructional coaches, our teacher leaders, and our administrators, and just trying to make that whole vision come together is really the essence of what I do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, that kind of ties into, you know, the leadership perspective that you talked about in the trench question, and the relationships, right? Because you're kind of that middle person, right? Between the superintendent and the principals, are also working with the Board of Ed and helping those mm-hmm. District and building leaders tie things together. And I was just curious, what is the size of your district in terms of students and staff?
Yeah, we're right at about 2,000 students, just a little bit over 150 certified teachers and a little over 330 full-time staff members in our district.
Okay. So I mentioned in the bio about the book that you're writing that will come out in 2023, A Parent's Guide to Grading and Reporting, Being Clear About What Matters. You're co-authoring it with Dr. Matt Townsley. Tell me a little bit about how this came about. And you also wrote a peer-reviewed article last year about it. So what are you trying to accomplish in kind of having the schools tie in that conversation when the book comes out?
Sure. Well, thanks for bringing it up. I'm really honored to be in this project with Dr. Townsley, certainly considered to be probably a top 10 grading and assessment expert in the United States, if not the world. And so I'm very, very blessed to work with him. And we worked together and sort of collaborated and kicked around some ideas about how are districts that are moving towards more evidence-based grading practices, standards-based, standards reference, competency-based grading, all of those. How is it that those schools don't pick up more leverage on growth-oriented teacher evaluation models? I mean, they're both based on growth and sort of either rubrics or frameworks of scales and so forth. We just felt like it was a little bit ironic, and maybe that there's some. So our research was really about how you could leverage one to help the other. And we kind of call it walk the talk, right? Okay. You know, and so that's where that research kind of came from. And you can probably find that online somewhere. It's an open resource. Article on JSARD that you all can read about that. But that allowed us to work together on something we're both passionate about. He does a lot of grading and assessment work as a school leadership professor at the University of Northern Iowa, assistant professor, and he also is a previously published in standards-based grading with Solution Tree in 2020 with a co-author, Nathan Ware. So really just a great expert. We loved working together. And in our conversations, one of the things that we constantly talk about is that as districts bite that big apple, that growth or that second order change to move towards away from some traditional grading practices towards more grading practices aligned to standards, the parents are oftentimes the left out link in terms of the adequate communication, getting to the why and understanding that. And so consequently, a quick Google search will find places where standards reference, standards-based grading or competency-based grading has been well received, and places where it's not been well received, and there's whole PTA or PTO organization opposed to it. And the reason why, in part, is because they don't fully understand the rationale or the understanding or the benefits or even the perils of traditional grading practices. And so we felt like one of the missing narratives in school administrators and teachers struggle with sometimes is to have a consistent, understandable approach to the research that could be provided to parents. And the other thing is that we feel like it's a positive conversation. It's not that the reason why people move away from traditional grading is because it just doesn't work. It's not been effective on so many different levels, and the research just really doesn't support it from some different angles, including motivation. So we felt like we could contribute to the research that's out there and the support from a professional development or a literature standpoint by creating a parents guide. I mean, I work in schools. I'm a practitioner. We're a standards reference grading school district in Glenwood. There's a number of them throughout the nation that have those principles. Matt, also my co-author, was a school practitioner in school improvement in Solon, Iowa, before he became a professor. So we have a really good both theoretical background and practitioner background to write such a book. And so we put together an outline and prospectus and a couple chapters and pitched it to a publisher and secured a contract to write the book. So we're writing it right now. It's a lot of fun. We're trying to create it truly as a guidebook for parents that they would be able to say, you know, sort of, here's a question I have and here's some things to think about. So we're sort of framing it around maybe 7 to 10 big questions around if my child is about to go through a district that has a grading change, you know, philosophically changing. Mm-hmm. Here are the basic questions we see all the time, and here's some research and some practical advice to understand why you might want to do that and why your school district's doing that. And then we sort of wrap up chapters with, here's some questions you can ask your child, and here's some questions that you might want to ask your teachers about their evolution. So that's sort of the design of the book and how it came about.
Mm-hmm. And this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I think that's great to have, because I remember back in like 2013 to 2015, I was at a school that used standards-based grading, and we formed a parent partners coalition, and we had some meetings with parents and explaining, you know, how we graded, and it was a high school, and how that would transfer, because they were always concerned about the GPA and applying to college. But, you know, and you know, a lot of schools have used standards-based grading for, you know, the past 10 years. However, to actually have a guide for the parents, like, you're going to put that practical guide together, right? So they can walk through that with their child or the teachers and really understand the process, I think is you know, something I'm looking forward to reading when that does come out. And I'm glad that you were able to, you know, work with him and secure a contract. You have mentioned to me as well that you are in the process of starting a consulting firm called Recalibrate Educational Services, LLC. So talk to me a little bit about what you will offer consulting services in.
Yeah, my writing kind of hobby has sort of consumed all my time on top of being a dad of fourth grade twins. But I've been in the process of putting together my own small consulting firm called Recalibrate Educational Services for schools that sometimes just need someone else from a different place with a different lens to take a look at really their whole picture of what's going on in their district to try to gain some momentum and synergy around a few things. So I can work with districts to help them understand some program evaluation, like, hey, where are we out of alignment with each other? And I can give you an example of that in just a bit. And then secondarily, maybe also be available to help plan and design an action plan to move towards a different grading practices. I feel really comfortable in being able to do that. I've done a little bit of that work already with some school districts just from Zoom, just getting some things talked about as leadership teams and maybe some pitfalls of what should be considered. And then thirdly, the kind of third arm of Recalibrate Educational Services is to try to talk about and work with district leaders, teams, teachers, coaches, and stakeholders about how to move forward to develop 21st century skills and competencies with your students within the framework of your own curriculum, within the framework of your own school system. So it's not an additive approach, but actually comes to address some of those things that we often hear as adults, we complain about students. And what I always joke, they're actually, most of them are not 21st century skills. They're 18th, 19th, and 20th century skills that we just need to see appear in the 21st century. So from, you know, how do we plan to purposefully include teaching these explicit skills and behaviors that we worry about our kids not having? For example, something as simple as problem solving, critical thinking, collaborating as a team, being a good person, sort of that whole social emotional holistic lens. How do we plan that out? Mm-hmm. And where I can come in and work with schools is to say, well, let's look at what you're currently doing. Because I know from a school improvement director lens, is there's tons of great programs and companies that you could actually contract with and consult with that could come and bring a whole package system. Yeah. And they're great. There's tons of great stuff. But the problem is that's just another thing. It's another initiative that isn't overlaid and interwoven in the day-to-day practices. It's just another initiative. And while it's great, it's just one more thing. I always felt like as a teacher, I had a box. This is the amount of time that mentally and physically I have to plan, to organize, to get my dog to the groomer, all these things, right? And you can't keep putting things in, you can't make the box bigger. So what happens is the things inside there get reprioritized and everything shrinks when you do that. It's not that they get interwoven. And that's what you, that's the job of a good school leadership team, is to say, here's going to be the additional lift. Here's why we do PBIS and standards reference grading together. Mm-hmm. That's why we would do this. You see where they fit together. So often schools are this patchwork of initiatives that don't necessarily align.
Yeah.
And they're patched and jammed together, sometimes from different administrations. And so what happens is I think about them as sort of the gear ratios behind a machine. Mm-hmm. They weren't built to work together. And so can you make them work? Yes. Over time, though, they grind down segments and broken pieces from previous gears, get clogged up in there. And it, you never really stop to peel it back off and look at that Peter Drucker principle of maybe we should do something taking away before we add. And so Recalibrate Educational Services, through that consulting, I can help take really a bystander approach to just lay it all out there. Talk to me about what you're doing. What's the interaction between them? Are you really getting the bang for the buck, the ROI of why you're doing what you're doing in relationship to each other? Independently, I usually say, because I get hit up by vendors and things all the time in my job. And what I tell them is, it's all good. Very rarely does somebody ever present something to me and it just looks like garbage. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's great, but you can't do all the great ideas. And so it takes some vision and some vetting to think about. And sometimes you just need someone outside of your snow globe to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm hoping to be able to do in the future as just a passion of mine. A lot of that comes from my background and my doctoral work and program evaluation from the University of Missouri in really a non-K-12 setting. Mm-hmm. It was a great program where I was able to really work with some higher ed leaders, some clergy, people from nonprofit organizations on how they attack and do some program evaluation and bringing that into the K-12 sector. So we'll see. Maybe I have more ideas than sense, but that's generally how I think we need to go about going forward with our school initiatives and getting synergy around holistic growth.
Yeah.
That way, because I think our kids sense that, oh, this is now time to be better citizens.
Yeah.
During this block at this time.
Sure. No.
We want kids to be better citizens all the time. But if you teach it in a siloed approach, they act it out in a siloed approach sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to have better digital citizenship when you're doing the digital citizenship lesson. But what about when you're in English language arts? What about when you're in some other course? It's that application. And I think I hope that I could be a voice that would help school districts say, how do we do that? Where we just need someone with a different briefcase and a different zip code maybe to take a look at that. And so that's sort of the genesis behind that idea.
Okay. Yeah. I'm happy you were able to kind of lay out what services you'll provide. And I think that is something a lot of districts and schools are, you know, looking at what initiatives are important to stick with. I think they're, like you said, initiative fatigue. Some people have really implemented the SEL strategies, the check-in, the daily check-ins, the morning meetings, things like that. But then there are teachers and, you know, staff that just tire of that and don't always see the reason for it. But I think as we move into the 2022-23 school year, it's important to really kind of set down what is important for each school and district. So since we're both podcasters, I am interested in learning kind of what got you started with your podcast. So you have two seasons out with Learning with Interesting People, and what is the premise and kind of what types of conversations do you have on the podcast?
Great. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a hobby. I'll be completely honest with you. It's nothing more than that. I'm not super great at it and nearly as good as I'd like to be. It came about because of the pandemic. It wasn't because that I had extra time on my hands. It was more because I was tired of negative narratives. And just not being around positive people, not so much being around positive people, but just having consistent positive voices. Mm-hmm. It caused me to do a lot of reflection of the people that I've been so fortunate enough to meet and interact with. And I'm like, I wish people, and maybe I connect with them on Twitter or Facebook or something. And I'm like, man, I wish someone else knew this person, somebody that I've came across in my path. So it just sort of came to this, I have a little bit of creative spirit in there. And so it just came to this point where I'm like, well, I should start a podcast and interview these people so that other people get to know them and how great they are. And I'm going to control the questions so that we can focus on a positive conversation.
Yeah.
And, just kind of, I have sort of a dry humor. And I was like, well, there's nothing more to it than we're going to learn with interesting people that I think are interesting. And so I really reached out within my network at first of some of the most interesting people that I really respect and I've learned a great deal from and continue to learn from, developed somewhat of a consistent script. And it's just an interview style format that lasts between 45 and 60 minutes of people from all walks of life, backgrounds and occupations. It's not a totally K-12 driven podcast. It's really all about learning, how they learn, how they like to learn, how learning works within their organization or their family or their hobbies. Everybody from, former NFL athletes to, principals to former college vocal music directors to, you name it. I really try to get as diverse backgrounds as possible. I had a Disney trainer for 30 years, Louis Gravant, just to get this sort of cumulative effect of, and what has happened is, which is what I would hope would happen, was that you're starting to see some really great themes, no matter what, of great learners. No matter what they do, no matter how old they are and what their background is, sort of organically, if you've listened to the episodes, and I encourage you to do so if you would enjoy that, is you'll see some themes and hopefully people can take that and apply that to what they do and really think about some themes like, have I told people things I want to get better at in my life? Mm-hmm. That's a theme. Have I surrounded myself with people that'll push me? That's another theme. Third theme, have I had people in my life push me to take that next step, even when I didn't think that was something I needed or wanted to do. So there's themes like that that show up, and it really hopefully causes some reflection. We're in season two now. I don't have a very regular schedule like you do. I'm not as organized as you. I kind of take them as they come in conversation. And I think that leads to a lot more organic conversation and ideas. So that's where it came from. That's why we do it. It's been a lot of fun. I've made a lot of great connections and strengthened connections. I always tell people it's just sort of selfish on my part that I get to have a 45-minute conversation with someone I look up to and I just put it online.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it is.
Well, thanks, for showing, listeners what, because a lot of these people I talk to on my podcast are, they might be podcasters as well, but they don't always talk to people from all walks of life. And, you're not just maybe leading a school or district, but people who are, leading other organizations or families. So I'll definitely put the links in the show notes to that and people can check it out. Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Yeah, I think remembering the main thing, there's a bunch of things, but if I had to pick one thing, is communicate with the people you really value in your life about what your goals are and what it is that you want to do in the short and the long term, even if you don't understand why you would tell them that, because it's amazing how life works, that they know someone who knows someone and they say, you know, hey, I know someone who has a podcast about something just like that. I never thought that I would run into someone, but I did. And had I never had that conversation, we never would have connected, right? Yeah. And that's not selfish. It's just amazing, that sort of butterfly effect or that downstream effect, but it never happens without you being vocal and not being a show off or being egotistical, but really thinking about, even just with your best circle. I really challenge people to think about it this way. When I was a basketball coach years ago, I used to ask my players to think about who would be in the trenches with you. Who are those five people? And we'd actually draw circles and then say, put their names in it, but you don't have to show anybody. And do you know who those people are? Because you're the average of those five people. And we would do that activity at the beginning of the season. And it was just for them. And I wanted them to know, are any of those people on our team right now? So with that same type of approach, think about that trenches activity. If you had three or four or five or six names around you, have you told all of those people? It could be your spouse. It could be someone at church. It could be someone that you've been friends with only online, or what have you. Have you told them, what is it that I would like to get better at, that I want to learn more about, unprovoked maybe, and what are some goals that I have that I'd really like to do? I have not been shy about telling people that I want to be an author, that because it's not something I've had a passion on about my whole life. It really just, I stumbled across it through, you know, writing a dissertation, basically. I've not been known for that. But what I've done is it's been very direct and tell people, you know, I want to publish two books by such and such a time. And it sort of comes out of left field. But it's just, the power of people is so important. I think I learned a little bit of that from Louis Gervais that I mentioned, who was a guest on season one, but so many others, is life's too short to not do that. I mean, I think it's Daniel Pink who has a new book out about the power of regret. And I haven't finished it, but some of the things in there, it's like, it's just heartbreaking about the types of things people live their whole life about and have regrets about. These are simple things. This isn't, you know, losing weight or things that can be really complicated, or, you know, love lost or something like that. These are goals. These are positive things. And so, just my advice, one thing I would take away is have an opportunity to do that. And it starts with one person today when you hear this podcast, and then just grow it into, and it doesn't have to be this big braggadocious thing or like pie in the sky. It could be something simple. And you know, if you like James Clear's work on Atomic Habits, just starting with one degree, one step, it seems like it doesn't make a difference, but it does. And I just think being vocal about that, I'm sure most people have heard about like writing your goals on the mirror and things of that nature, having it be tangible. I just think you should take it a step further and actually talk to people about it. And even if they have no clue how they could be beneficial to you, those people that are closest to you in your life will invest in your goals in some way, shape, or form. It just comes to work that way. And then there's some reciprocity there too. It actually encourages them to do the same. So I would say that would be kind of the main piece of advice or goal that I would share from this episode.
Wow. I think that's so great to hear, because you think about writing goals, but actually sharing them with people, even if you don't think they might be able to help you. But I think once you've shared it, then it becomes more real, right? It becomes more tangible. So definitely, you know, you mentioned some great authors and resources in there as well. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not as active as some on Twitter, but I definitely am, you know, daily at @Chad_M_Lang, L-A-N-G. The Learning with Interesting People podcast handle is @learn_W_PPL. And that's really just positive messaging and updates about our podcast, and really doing that on my personal Twitter handle is really just a little bit of everything in terms of some good stuff I see out there, both K-12 and leadership in general. And then anybody's welcome to email me at chadmichaellang@gmail.com. It's just all lowercase, chadmichaellang@gmail.com. I'd be happy to connect with anybody. I love the field of education and what we do. I'm not shy about the fact that learner is my number one strength. according to Gallup. And I think that makes perfect sense to me. And I don't know everything. I just love the opportunity to engage with folks and learn for the betterment of everybody else. And most importantly, kids, but also each other. You know, it's just something that, you know, coming from a pretty blue collar background and family upbringing, I just always knew that education is one thing that can never be taken away from you. And so something that's just invaluable. So I really enjoy having the opportunity to connect with people about that. And so those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me.
Great. I'll make sure I mention those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dana, for including me in your podcast. Keep up the good work, and thank you for everybody for listening.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.